Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It is the Star Chamber Show. It is a Wednesday night, and it is a great Wednesday for episode number 116. And we've got a great guest coming up a little bit later tonight. We're going to cover some topics that we don't often explore on the Star Chamber Show. But first, I want to welcome our co-host, the man himself, Daniel Dark, and in right at the nick of time, Michael West.
Hey. What's going on, guys?
Michael sounds very excited. We'll have to give him some Valium to calm down just a little bit before we get going. Oh man,
Michael always starts out that way. He builds with anticipation. You know,
he's a true horror master. He builds up the suspense and then hits you with the big surprise and unveil.
expect it when you least expect it.
Right. Well, it's definitely been a few days for me. If I'm a little, if I start, you know, marking out just numbers randomly, it's because, in the indie world, when you go through sales sheets and royalty reports and spreadsheets, it gets mind numbing, and especially when you do about three good solid days of it. But yeah, I've been mired in spreadsheets and reports and all kinds of fun stuff for on the press side of things, and had a whole lot. But I'm pleased to say I'm finished, and we are just squeaky clean and current and up to the minute on all paperwork fronts, and it's beautiful. So my bourbon tonight on the show has been well earned. I just want you to know that. Oh my God. Because I'm one of those people that I always double and triple check everything, so I probably make it harder than it needs to be. But I always figure that's the way I show appreciation for cool writers like both of you. So it's by making sure I double and triple check, and every once in a while you catch a little error here or there, and that, you know, it's always good to get as accurate as possible. But not too many mistakes ever, but
no, I must say that I've never seen royalty reports that are as transparent and as thorough and complete as the ones we get from Seven Star. So,
I was just chatting with Daniel a little bit about that just before the show, because he was looking at it and going, "Oh my God, what is?" And I was like, "Well, it will tell you exactly where every single unit sold came from and how much exactly was brought in. How much? Yeah, it's a very detailed report, but I think it's good because it does give everybody at least a complete picture, and which can be useful because it's, you know, these times are trying in our industry, so it's always good to get any bit of info that we can. So
my first one to look at too. So.
Well, and it always surprises me because, you know, the book that does the best during a particular quarter is never the one you would expect.
Yeah.
Or the one.
Oh, no.
You know, it's like you say, oh, I've got new thing X. New thing X is going to take off, and no, it's this thing that you've had out for, you know, 10 years. And
I actually have run into the same thing, and you'll notice it when you get a lot of titles. Like Michael and I both have quite a few titles now, and so our reports are like, you know, each have like what, 10, 12, 14, whatever pages.
Our reports
of different pages.
Are short fiction.
yeah, there's pages for every single title. So I mean, we got a nice pile of stuff when we get done with one like ours, or Shrewsbury's another one that's got quite a few. But yeah, these. It is kind of cool, though. Yeah, when you suddenly out of the blue,
different than mine that you put on a post-it note.
Yeah. But no, I love the ones like yours that are like one title, so I can okay, check mark, got Daniel done. It's a little easier. A little bit easier, but
let's see. Done.
But soon there will be another one added to your file, because it'll be Victorian Catsup, which is a cool nonfiction title, which I know. Michael will love this one. It's awesome. But it fits with you and your fiction world beautifully, because of your stuff set in the Victorian era. So the new Catsup book is going to be just awesome. So. And it's really loaded with recipes from that time, or as I should say, receipts of the past. So, but that got announced. Last week, just to remind me, we announced that last Wednesday, correct? That was Wednesday.
Yeah, we came out with the cover and announced it Wednesday.
That was Wednesday. And Friday, I had a Dream of the Navigator cover reveal, so I had my new YA book launched, and at least the pre-order and the cover art. And believe it or not, that monthly thing that I'm doing with the ebook novellas, I had another one announced today, which was When the Cold Breathes. So that's it's been kind of a crazy week. We ended up with three cover reveals in a week, so.
I just saw that one about 20 minutes ago. So
I'm starting to wonder when and if Stephen sleeps.
No,
he doesn't.
I wrote a huge batch of material back in January and February, so I got ahead of the curve a little bit. So it's not that I'm having to scramble to create new ones to keep up with the pace. I'm actually a little ahead, so I can hopefully keep up with it, but. It's definitely not the easiest, but excited about it. And I also wanted to say last week was fun too, because we finally solved the mystery. And Mike, I don't think Michael is on for that one, but we've been calling Eric Kier for so long because of the Norse god Tyr, and so we always assumed that with his name spelled Kyr that it was Kier. But we found out last week it is in fact pronounced Kyr, and so we came up with the slogan, since he is a brilliant audio engineer in addition to a fine actor and a very talented musician. We're going to call him Eric Kyr for hire now. So I finally got the mystery resolved, and it's like each week I'm learning about people that I've known for a while and how they really spell their names. That happened with Tony Acri recently, because I've been calling him Acri for like years, and so it's odd.
How did you come up with Acri?
None of my friends ever correct me. You all leave me out to dry. If you're listening, Eric and Tony, yeah, for years misspelling or mispronouncing your names, and then then you finally reveal it on the Star Chamber show.
Yes, but is it Yanni or Laurel?
Yes. Now I could. That's a little. I saw a little bit, a meme about that or something, so I gotta catch up on that one. But
did you hear it, Daniel?
Yeah.
What is
it? And I don't know what the controversy is. It only says one word every time that I hear it. So.
What do you hear?
Laurel. And that's what that's what the recording is.
I hear Yanni.
Yeah, I don't know who, who put that in your head, but you're wrong. And according to the people that actually recorded it, it is Laurel.
Well, what I heard as an explanation for, I was like going, how can this be? And what I heard as an explanation, and it was confirmed on the, I heard somebody posted it earlier, and then it was confirmed on the nightly news tonight, that actually both words are there, but one is recorded in the higher register, and one is recorded in the lower register. So it depends on where your hearing is more sensitive. If you hear more in the higher register, you hear Yanni. If you hear more in the lower register, you hear Laurel. And there are some people who listen to it and they kind of hear a little bit of both. But for me, it's like I don't hear anything but Yanni. But I have people who I've talked to, you know, Daniel included, that say they hear Laurel. So it's just very interesting. It's
and,
you know, it goes
yeah,
back
with,
to that.
With me, I'm half deaf anyway, so you know, that could be a reasoning for it. And they also said that, you know, according to what you're listening to it on, what type of equipment
that's
you're
true.
Listening to it on, and how many times it's been recorded, you know,
right,
how many devices
heard,
it's gone through.
Right, because I've heard people who say that, you know, they hear one thing when they hear it on their computer, but when they hear it on their phone, they hear something else. So, yeah, it has to do with your settings and your own hearing. But it's just fascinating when the entire country just fixates on one thing for a day.
Yeah, I was there,
man.
Listening to that this morning on the news, and I was like, what is the controversy here?
Did somebody just make this up or what? Right, because it's like, it's, you know, they're playing, and I heard what I heard, and they're like going, Bo, what do you hear? And I'm like, well, what do you mean, what do you hear? It's only one word. Yeah, like Daniel said, it's like they only say one word. I don't know what you're talking about. But it's just really interesting that how, you know, people that, I mean, you can be standing right next to somebody and they have a totally different experience than what you're having.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, what color is red? If you've always been told a certain color is red in your eyes.
If you go back to the blue and black dress then, you know, where people swore that it was black or people swore that it was blue, you know. It's just weird how you know, we can be in the same world but yet perceive it so differently.
Yep. And speaking of perceiving differently, did I hear we have a report from the production company?
A report from the production company. Oh dear. Yeah, so yeah, that.
Well, oh yeah.
I'll get our guests on here in just about. Well, I got to get this in 2 minutes because I got to get our guest on here because he is an awesome guest. And he's actually tied to this, and I'm sure he will say a few things about this. But we are, we're finally holding an advanced test screening in VV, Indiana. That's going to be at the historic Hoosier Theater in downtown VV, Indiana on June the 2nd. It's a Saturday for Raiden Valkyrie's Saga of the Lionheart. Yes. We finally are going to show a what we are aiming to be 100% finished version. At worst, it'll be 98% finished. But regardless, you know, every production, especially in a situation like ours, we're really wanting to make it as strong as possible before we present it for series consideration. We want to have a test screening and get some feedback. And so, if there's anything that you know that we haven't you know, seeing the process, it needs some, you know, tweaking, we can do it. So we are holding a test screening of the project in VB, Indiana. And I think we're holding two screenings right now because of the number of people who've been wanting to see it. So I think it's a great historical theater. Small one holds about 200, but it's looks like we are going to hold two screenings on Saturday, June the 2nd. So we will be putting tons of information on that on Seven Star Press channels, Raiden Valkyrie channels, on my personal ones. And so, yeah, just be on the lookout for all those because they will give you information on how you can get tickets to the advanced screening, which 100% the Hoosier Theater has been gracious enough to work with us on this. All they've asked is a $3 ticket donation that goes 100% to the historical theater. Nothing goes to us, 100% to them. And it's just $3 donation for those that want to come to the advanced screening. So should be a really good time. It's great to finally be able to unveil, you know, the goods. And I think everybody's going to be very excited when they see this. So that is a bit of good news. And yeah, we had that all flying today while I was busy sending reports and spread and checks and stuff out.
No matter how much I want
to
see it, I probably will not make it to it.
Well, I'm sure you'll see it at some point, Daniel. Michael will do his usual. He'll show up right at the time of screening.
It's a little bit of a drive for me to, you know.
Yeah, Michael
or,
makes
or a movie
splash
that's a little bit of drive.
In a limousine or something, but we I will be there. I will be there. So, but yeah, I do want to get tonight's guest on before we go too much farther here. He is awesome. I've had a chance both to work with him and have him as a guest at Imaginarium. He's an author. He's a filmmaker. He's a screenwriter. He's a poet. And also something I want to mention is something we have a ton of respect for on the Star Chamber show. He is a military veteran, and that is going to come into a little bit to tonight's discussion. And so definitely a salute to him on that. And this, of course, is the one, the only Sheridan C. Hall. You are on the Star Chamber show.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How you doing tonight?
I'm breathing. Like I said last time, Mr. Darko, I'm living the dream, hoping I wake up soon.
Well, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you for making
yes.
it easy.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
sure
hopefully, if you're living a dream, it's a good dream and you won't have to wake up from it.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Yeah, he's a little farther away from us now geographically than when we first got to meet and associate with Sheridan. He's moved a little more west. But he's sounds like you're doing well out there.
Trying to get into the swing of family life with my girlfriend, fiance, and our 5-year-old little boy. So I decided to get in a relationship with a woman who had a restarted family. So
awesome. Congratulations on that. That is fantastic, because I know that's very important to you, and certainly. But we're thrilled to have you, man, because about a year ago today, I mean, we were warming up to get involved in that crazy adventure of the Raiden Valkyrie TV pilot, which started shooting the first week of June back in last
mm-hmm.
year. And here we are, almost 1 year later, and just getting ready to unleash the test screening version. And it's great to have you on the show at this time. I think that's fantastic, because you ended up just diving right in, working your way right into being with props and just everything, and even getting killed by Brock on screen. So
yep.
Which
story wise. I think I got killed by both of them. I played a dead
uh-huh.
body in the creek bed, and the film
yep.
crew, I remember that. The film crew, I was laying there quiet, didn't move, got a crick in my neck and everything like that, and the camera guys are walking off, and I'm like, are we wrapped or am I good? And they said, oh, yeah, we forgot you were even there. I was like, oh, wow, thanks. So.
Oh, man. But it's you did a great job, both as as the dead body in the creek and as the opponent for Brock, and that's definitely one where nobody's gonna miss the kill on screen. That's definitely in there, and it's a good one, real good one. I won't give away what happens to you, but it's pretty dramatic. And then
we both know, I think so. We're good.
Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about your writing, because that's definitely how you. A screenwriter and author, that's how you, are obviously very active in our writing community and are getting your guests this year at Imaginarium again, of course. And tell us about, for those listeners that may not know you yet, a little about your spheres of writing.
Well, my spheres of writing kind of evolved throughout the years. I started off as a poet as a kid. I was in facilities due to some behavior and some mental issues that I was dealing with. And so I picked up Edgar Allan Poe, and I just read the darkness that he had, and something clicked, and I felt that he was expressive. So I wrote poetry for a number of years, and then kind of got burned out, I guess you could say, on that, was hitting brick walls. And so I went to opinion pieces, and at the time, religious focus, and went to then escalated to book reviews for a short time, and then short stories, and then just recently, about this past month, I started with Jay Whalen, who we got to have on last week.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm actually working on his universe right now with some fantastic guys. And so, yeah, it's in the past 18, soon to be 20, 19 years come October, I've been running for 18, 19 years now. So
fantastic. Yeah, and it's cool that you operate in three distinctly different spheres. We're talking, you know, you've got your poetry, you've got, you know, your prose and author side, and then you've also got your, you know, screenwriting side. And as I understood it last week, you know, one of your areas of emphasis with Jay is dialogue. Is that correct? Dialogue writing
in
Jay's theme?
Yes, that is. When it comes to the screenwriting, the way we have it with multiple people is pretty much we have somebody who's been working with Jay for a while. And so, yeah, they brought me on for strictly dialogue, making sure that the characters are being fleshed out verbally so that when they get to the screen, people know. So, yeah, it dialogue, in a sense, in itself is character development. So.
Oh, man. Well, as far as what's coming up next, as far as when are we going to see your first work that's out of this group, you know, that you've been a part of?
With working with Jay for the screenwriting, we're trying to get it done here shortly. Don't want to give too much away because, of course, this is Jay's baby. But from what I understand, we're working soon to be with the production in August, trying to get it filmed. And then, as we talked about again as you guys talked about last week, you know, it could be a matter of, you know, 5 months to 7 months to when we actually see the production. So, but I've worked with Jay on two of his most recent TSC installments. So, but not in the capacity of the screenwriter. So,
very cool, very cool. Well, I don't want to hog all the questions here. So, because we got to talk to Sheridan a little bit last week when he called in to surprise Jay. But is there anything you wanted to probe with the man here?
Well, I'm just curious as to. With the you know, getting involved with the Raiden Valkyrie pilot, what was your favorite aspect of an independent production of that nature, and you know, what do you think, you know, in hindsight, that you would do differently today if you were to do it over again?
Well, to start off with the latter of your question, parts of your question, what I would do differently would probably not be so annoying and probably want the people silently wanting to kill me.
I didn't.
So
I liked you.
You were always on set, Steven. You always got you always lucked out. But now I,
you have to be in the director. Yeah, you gotta be.
So I would hope so. But yeah, I mean, again, it was that thing where I'm an extreme extrovert, and when I get excited, you can tell. And I was just hyper all the time. Like, okay, I want to do this. I want to do this. And if Dale Miller is listening to this, who is a fantastic guy. And, I mean, nobody that I know of can stop saying that great things about that man. When he was looking for people to work on choreography and fights, he was like, I think I bugged him a little bit about, like, this is what I said. This would be funny. And Dale was, like, kind enough. He was just like, no, Sheridan, this is what we're doing. I was like, okay. So he kind of put me in my place like a little puppy dog, but he did it in such a great way that kind of really made me open up and open my eyes and see, you know, this isn't my baby. I'm just here to make this happen and do my best that I can for Steven and for Dale or whoever else was in charge of fight. So definitely open my ears and shut my mouth a little bit more would have been my fixer fixer-upper. But, I mean, the great aspect was just definitely working with a bunch of people, a bunch of new people. I think the only real people I knew were the producers. I mean, I knew Holly, Steven, Frank, and, of course, the Judes, who are phenomenal people as well. And that was all I knew. Those were the only people I knew. And so just being thrown into that mix, I mean, I threw myself in head on, and I just loved the progression, and the opportunity really was to be, because originally I was just brought on to be a production assistant, pretty much be the gopher, do whatever needed done. And I ended up doing with props. I remember Holly saying, "Hey, Sheridan, we need some work on these weapons, and can you personalize them a little bit?" And I said, "Yeah." And so just little thing led to another, and I get killed by the main man himself. So, I mean, it was really the whole experience. I can't take really one thing away from it.
Oh, yes. It's a comprehensive experience, that's for sure, whenever you do an indie production, because as Sheridan can vouch for, you end up wearing multiple hats. Whereas, you know, maybe a larger, bigger budgeted production, you tend to be, you know, have the range to have everybody be a little more specialized in wearing only one hat. You know, these you tend to, you know, people have one or more hats. So it's definitely, you know, it's good and bad, you know, because it gives you a chance to try different things. At the same time, it does result in a little bit more pressure at times. And that kind of segues into what I want to bring into the mix a little bit here. And it's something we hinted at in our promos leading up to the show. And that's, you know, mental health as a creative. And for you, it's got also the fact that, you know, you with your poetry and your background, you, you know, in the military, you address, you know, PTSD through your creative channels. And you're an advocate for that. And so I wanted to give you a chance to take the stage tonight to talk a little bit about that topic in areas of mental health and dealing with, you know, the things that, you know, come at you as a creative and, you know, with you, with your background in military and PTSD, how you work with that with the creative world.
Absolutely. I was actually thinking about that today and what I would say, and to be honest, I mean, I got an opening statement for that, but I mean, my main thing is everybody's experience is different, so I don't want to give, you know, too many pointers and try to say, well, this worked for me, I think it'll work for you, because I mean, I don't know, but, and you mentioned the PTSD, my mental health personal experience goes back to while I was still in single digits of age, and one of the biggest things, I'm even a bigger advocate for suicide and depression awareness than I am PTSD, and also I advocate for substance abuse, specifically with alcohol, because I'm also a recovered alcoholic, and it's just a lot of that is, as creatives, this is our outlet. That's the best way I can open this, is that as creatives, usually you see our struggles and everything in our artwork. Like, here's not trying to throw a little promo out for myself, but in my first book that I just released of my short story collection, you see what I value. You see what, so like with Steven, with what you value, you can see what you value with, you know, strong women characters. Honor, you see the value and you see the heart of the author and the writer in anything that a creative does, and also an artist. I mean, you can look at a painting and kind of tell what the artist was feeling. And so for mental health in creatives, you see it a lot, but the inner war is really what a lot of people don't see. Like for me, just a brief story to kind of explain it a little bit. So back at last year, when before Raiden and everything, back in January of last year, I had just gotten, was going through a divorce and really feeling depressed, really feeling worthless, that I had nothing to offer the world, because I also lost the ability to be a son to my own, a father to my own blood son, and for multiple reasons. And so just really feeling like, you know, I had nothing to offer this world, so why was I still here? And I remember thinking that as I was looking at the divorce papers, that it was finalized, and then I get this email from Holly, and saying, hey, we want to accept you as one of the guests and have you come in. And that was the light for me. That was the light that said, hey, I've got something to offer the world. I can use my experience to help people, whether it be in writing, whether it be in mental health. And that's what I think being a creative in some sense is just our hunt for purpose in a sense. And I mean, as artists, you never hear of an artist say, don't look at this, I don't want you to look at it. We're always looking in, sometimes in healthy, sometimes in unhealthy ways. I've played both sides of the coin on that. But we're all looking for validation in some sense. And I think that is one of the biggest things that, as authors, we get so defeated with, or any artist, is when you don't feel like your work is being validated. As in, like, for years, I would have never thought that I would have been self-published or anything working on a film set, because I just didn't feel good enough. And it just took one person, Lynn Tincher, actually, who is another fantastic woman and a person who has helped me on my journey. Her, Frank Hall and Tony Acree, who at the time were owning Karen's Book Barn, and they just really spoke into me and said, Sheridan, this is great. You need to pursue this. This is something that you truly have a gift for. And that alone helped me quell a lot of the battles that I deal with on a daily basis. So, and that's really pretty much all I really have to say for myself. I mean, I definitely want to answer questions that people have. But yeah, that's pretty much the story, the kind of the view I have on mental health in creative.
Very good.
Well, not to get too personal, but for your mental health issues you were having, were you ever prescribed or put on medications?
Yes. I started when I was with mental health issues, really, when I was, like, the earliest I can remember is, like, 8 or 9 years old. I was having a lot of anger issues, which I think most kids deal with at some point in rebellion. But it was to the point where I was a danger to the people around me. And so they put me on antidepressants, bipolar medicine, just anything. And it felt at that time, because it was the early 2000s, psychiatrists were still, you know, kind of playing around with dosages and stuff like that, and equalizing things in the mental health. I felt like a CVS drugstore. And but yeah, I've been prescribed. Right now, financial status. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no. The reason I ask is because I know from talking to a lot of creatives over the years that they've been, you know, when they get into that situation, they're resistant to go on meds simply because they feel it's going to alter or dampen their creativity. And I wonder if
yeah, if it dampens, I think I get what you're saying, if it dampens the process of being able to do what we feel validates us in our existence. And for me, it was never that personal, like the creative. It was always the overwhelming thing of, like, I felt that I was trading one sense of lack of control in not being on medication to having something else control me. It's always been about control. And for a lot of us, from a lot of the friends I've had, and even some of my fellow patients when I was in some facilities as a kid, I mean, that was always the thing that really got us, was we can't control it, and we just felt that somebody was trying to control us. And so, yeah, I mean, I can see where the fear would be that it would be dampening the creativity process and really changing who we are. But it was never, like, that specific for me. It was always more specifically about control.
Oh, I didn't know if Michael had a follow-up on that. I was being a little quiet there.
No. I just always like to hear the perspective of a creative on that issue, just simply because, you know, I've seen both sides of the coin where people, you know, embrace it and they benefit from it, from medications, and then other people, you know, resist it and you know, try to find different avenues to accomplish the same goals, just simply because they're afraid of you know, what that will do to their creative process. And you know, I've seen people who, you know, probably should have been medicated and resisted that you know, went down some bad roads that they maybe didn't have to go down just because of that fear.
Exactly. And that's why, for the roads that people go down, that's actually why, my newest undertaking, with the stories I've been writing, I play both sides of the field. I play, like, for instance, I'm an open book with my stories. So, if you guys have any other questions, feel free to ask them. But I am, a lot of people will raise eyebrows if they're listening to this, but I am I'd say I'm a survivor of multiple, 9 attempts to be exact, of suicide. And I say attempts because somebody has always walked in, or something happened, that just made it to where it didn't happen. And 6 of those were before I hit the age of, 18. And that was, like you said, that was because I refused to take my medicine. So that I'm one of those people that probably should have stayed on it, and I probably would not have brought myself so much pain, as well as my family and those who cared about me. That's why I'm writing the stories that I'm currently writing, because I want people to see this is really the world that we live in. These are the consequences. This is what's going to happen if you don't do what is necessary to get to be healthy in mind and in, you know, mind and spirit and whatever else, because with as a creative and mental health, with mental health specifically, we're so focused on the problem. A lot of us get so narrow-sided that we don't see what it's doing to everybody else, whether it be substance abuse, whether it be depression, PTSD, anything that really hinders us in that sense will definitely make you narrow-sided, and you'll only see one problem. You won't see the benefit of something else or the consequences of something else, like not being on medication.
Well, I have a question here to follow on that. If there's some people listening tonight that are creatives and might be resonating a little bit with some of the characteristics you're describing, or seeing a little bit of themselves in what you're describing, what are your words to them for, you know, take the first, you know, if they've never addressed something like their mental health, where do they start, you know, and can you maybe, you know, give a little advice on how to encourage them to not be afraid to, you know, take care of it?
It's very situational, because, I mean, a lot of people are open to different things. So for somebody who's depressed, would not be up to talking about it to somebody specifically, or somebody with anxiety. But the real thing that I can say is really look at what you value. What do you value most? Do you value, say, your family? Do you value your family more than your mental health? Whatever trouble it may be. And really, for The one thing, if I could say one thing that would really, I think, help is really just write down a letter of to yourself of this is how I feel, this is what's going on, because I think so many of us are, we feel bad about things after they happen, but in the situation we're so distraught, we're so overwhelmed by what's going on that we don't see what's going on in that process, so we don't think it. A lot of people who are depressed or anxious or PTSD, we're very impulsive, and so we act upon our feelings. We act upon our trouble and that emotion that's driving us at that time. And so I think really the moment you realize that, because anybody who's fought these mental issues for any length of time will know the warning signs. And when you see those warning signs, write something down, make a memo, something that you can look back on and be like, this is really what's going on. How can I, whether it be get on medication or this is something that somebody specifically does that doesn't help me. Maybe I need to go talk to them specifically about it. Like say, mom's always putting me down, or my husband, you know, never showing me attention, you know, because people, we can pinpoint things that will do that, will inflame those mental issues, and so we can always address them. I feel that addressing the issue itself is definitely a big thing, but we have to think about it first, because we don't like jumping into something that makes us uncomfortable.
And I had seen a post today, actually an author posted publicly today about it, but they had just been diagnosed with a condition that is described it as it's like a low level depression, where he never even realized that he had a condition because the symptoms were so more subtle in nature. They weren't easily recognizable. And so he had it for a long, long time before he realized he had a condition. And so, also in addition to, you know, what you're saying, sometimes these things are a little sneaky in the way they operate, and might be more subtle in the way they express, but it's almost like it's a constant, you know, burden, but it's running at a lower wavelength. And so you may not even recognize it as a problem until you do something like what you're talking about and get it down on paper, or really, try to express what you're dealing with. And then you might even realize, whoa, I've got that, or something of that nature. And I think that's it's a really, really good suggestion you made.
And to piggyback off of what you said about off that real quick, the one thing that I want to emphasize to anybody listening, anybody who will listen to this podcast later, emotions themselves, the emotions you're feeling, everybody feels them. Depression is an emotion. Everybody feels depressed. Everybody feels angry. Everybody feels anxious. Everybody feels nervous. Everybody feels something. Just with us who are diagnosed, and I put that in air quotes here as I'm talking, with the issue with managing this particular emotion or behavior, that in itself does not make you a bad person or an abnormal person. You just feel things differently. So I want to encourage anybody listening that your emotions are very valid. Don't let anybody ever tell you that your emotions are invalid, because I think that's one of the worst things anybody can do, especially out of misunderstanding. But definitely understand that the happiest person on the face of the planet still gets to the point where they feel depressed. And so that's, again, I just wanted to say that to make sure that I get that said today, because that is, I think, one of the biggest issues that a lot of people face, and why there's such a bad stigma on mental health. Because we look at it as an abnormality, when in reality, it's how we deal with it that's the abnormality, but the emotions are in themselves very real, very, very normal for a human being to feel.
That's a good, excellent point. Excellent point. Oh, did you have something to say, Daniel? Right, did I mishear there?
No, I'm just listening. Okay. Really.
Okay. I thought you'd start to speak. I didn't want to interrupt you. But with you talking about your writing and, you know, the ways you express things in your stories, I heard a little rumor that there's some kind of special going on right now with your works that, you know, so people can try you out. I guess, are you offering a free or discounted book right now with your stories?
Yes. Yes. So my first book is a collection of, five or six short stories. And a lot of them are more focused on depression, suicide awareness. One of them is actually an anti-bullying where, not to give too much away in this particular story, but it's written from the perspective of the person who is the bully, not the victim of bullying. So, but the book itself is called Wingless. Sorry, the lady wanted to come out and give me a kiss real fast. Love you, babe. Book one of the collection of the series that I'm writing, which are, I call episodic short stories of the Chronicles of the Suit. And the Suit is kind of this guardian who shows up and is either the voice of reason, who talks them out of it, or just a shoulder to cry on. So the way I described it is take the very basic sense of the 13 Reasons Why new show. I haven't seen it, but from what I'm from what people tell me, so take 13 Reasons Why, where it talks about suicide and the consequences, but then take the old late 90s TV show Touched by an Angel and kind of mix those together. And that's kind of what I'm working, stories I'm working on. And, but yeah, Wingless right now, it started at midnight, today, and then it's going until midnight tomorrow. The Kindle version is completely free. I beautiful thing about self-publishing or any publishing is I can track how many are sold, not who buys it, but how many are picked up. And last time I checked, 8 people had already gotten it, and I'm even running a special right now where if you read it and you comment on the post, your favorite short story from the book, you will be entered into a drawing where you will get a free signed copy of the physical copy of the book, and you will also receive a very limited edition Not All Angels Have Wings, a small poster to go along with the book.
Yes, and it's, I believe, I'm wondering, are you the cover model on the cover of this release? Just curious.
Yes. Yes. because, back when I had a little bit more facial hair and not a blue mohawk to go along with it.
Yes, I was going to bring that
blue
up
mohawk
next. I love the blue mohawk. Beautiful.
Yeah, that is very recent. Only second time
I've
gotten my
hair
any different.
They would love it with the go big blue thing. So,
well, I'm an Arkansas fan. I'm originally from Arkansas, so I bleed red. It's not the color red they want. Since the suit is really, because in any sense, you always see at least a character who the author, I'm pretty sure you have one, Steven, you too, Daniel, and you as well, Michael, have a character in your story that you feel very much resonates with yourself. And that is the suit with me, always trying to lend a hand, you know, try to be the voice of reason, trying to help other people, but something that a small, very small spoiler with, I guess it's not a spoiler because people will find out anyway. The suit is on a journey himself. So it's just, he's on a journey and you're going to see more people, in that sense that come alongside him. And cause it's as much of a learning experience for the suit as much as it is for the people he's helping. So, and then as the stories and the books come along, you're gonna see that there are hard truths to be learned as well with every story. So,
well, as you were talking, I actually got my copy. So that's how easy it is, folks. So get online and take advantage of this. And there is saw a 5-star review on there, and I want to mention that, you know, if you do pick it up and read it, please leave reviews, because that helps so much with an indie author, and mm-hmm. definitely with a new release like this. So, mm-hmm. But I got my copies on the way to my Kindle as we speak.
Thank you.
So
and something that I want to tell those who are thinking that I'm, you know, because I've had some people come up to me and say, oh, you're trying to use mental health as a way to earn some money, and I just want to quell those a minute. For me, if I don't make a dime, that's why, I mean, I would love to give my book for free all the time. Sadly enough, Kindle does not allow me to do that, or else that would be a 24/7 thing. But really, the reason for these stories, like I said earlier, are to just open up the mind. I have stories about PTSD, of what it's like to struggle with certain situations like that. I have suicide, heavily more based on suicide. I even have cutting story in there right now. And so there's really a lot of stuff, and I want to show a lot of people out there that you're not alone, that there is somebody who kind of knows that there's a story going on, and that these aren't my stories. These are our stories. We are in a collective. We battle side by side with each other with all of this stuff. And I'm just showing that, that I'm out here. I want to listen. And so I also want to tell anybody that's listening, if you ever just need somebody to talk to, if you ever need anything, I'm on Facebook. I do not turn away anybody. If you need to talk about anything, I will not have the all fixed answers. I will be brutally honest with you. If I feel that you need to call, say, the suicide hotline and get somebody and talk to somebody there, or if I feel that you really need to go and, you know, check yourself into a hospital because it's that dangerous for you, I will. But I want you to know that you're not alone, and that's exactly why these stories are being written, is to show the world and break stigma of what we struggle with on a day-to-day basis.
Well, certainly, yeah. No one should ever apologize for exploring, you know, in a creative world, the things that you deem important to you and are passionate about. I mean, and that's mm-hmm. and you've certainly brought all that together, you know, within your work. And there's no better person to do that sort of thing than somebody like you. So definitely kudos for, you know, not being afraid to follow that path. And that's what I would say in response. And I'm glad there are folks like you out there that can, you know, show those that might feel a little isolated that they aren't alone. That's very, very valuable. And certainly a lot of creatives can feel isolated, and especially authors. Yeah, because we tend to work in a more isolated medium, as opposed to, you know, I know you can relate to the team world of filmmaking, which of course has its own, mm-hmm. you know, challenges, you know, with different personalities and stuff. But in the author world, I mean, it is a very more introverted, solitary kind of path. So it's, you know, there could be a tendency for somebody to, you know, feel a little bit more isolated. And so that, yeah, it mm-hmm. can help a lot to have a writer like you out there. And that's very, very good. And, yeah, I definitely hope you continue, you know, guns blazing on this path. It's definitely
one more time. Give us some where you can pick that up at.
You can pick this up from the Amazon Kindle app itself, or you can go to the Kindle. I mean, I don't know how all the technology works. Anybody listening who is Facebook, you can check it out on Facebook. Just look up my name, Sheridan Hall, and I have a link to it. but it's on there. It's called Wingless, one word. But there's multiple people with that thing. It's an orange cover kind of background. And it's got a picture of, as you said, Stephen, it has my back, because I wanted to show I can't even think of the word. I'm an author and I can't even think of word right now. But
it happens. Don't worry.
anonymity. There we go.
Yes.
To who really is the suit? And so he's wearing a fedora. He's got a black suit on, and be more than welcome to pick it up. And but yeah, so it's on the Kindle app. Usually it's $2.99, but for right now, until tomorrow night at midnight, it will be for free completely.
Yep, and I actually, when you type in on Amazon in their main search bar, your full Sheridan C. Hall, you are the number one. Your book is the number one thing that comes up. So if you type in the full Sheridan C. Hall, this particular book will come up immediately, top of the list. And that's how I found it in a heartbeat just now while Sheridan was talking and downloaded my copy. But I do want to – I'm going to buy a paperback, though, because I like to – definitely like to support authors. So I will buy a paperback, but I did get one for my Kindle just to encourage everyone to do so, show you how easy it is. One click. How hard is that? Come on, folks. Let's help Sheridan out and get him some movement and some reviews and some things like that, because this is a valuable release and hopefully one of many, 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 many more to come. And, you know, definitely Imaginarium. Look forward to – I'll have to get your signature for sure.
Absolutely. You bring the book, and now I'll definitely sign it. And a lot of – also to just show how much that this book is more of an advocation for our people. Just coming up Imaginarium, I am in talks with a couple of organizations such as the Semicolon, which I value very much, the Semicolon movement, to write Love on Our Arms. I'm trying to get in contact with them so that I can all proceeds, all sales, this coming up Imaginarium will be going to one of those organizations in donation. I'm not going to see a red cent. Everything's going to go to them because, again, like I said, this book is an advocation. It's not for me to make money. I do not plan on making millions. I don't want to make millions. I just want to make sure that the world is that we have an advocate in paper form and in verbal form.
Very good, man. And looking forward to seeing you again, because now it's a little harder to see you with a little bit more of a distance between
us. 8 hours away.
Yeah, you're Michael's the closest to you right now. He's the farthest west of the three co-hosts here, but he's the nearest. we got about 2.5 minutes left, so. Important to, if there's any last thing you'd like to say, but also you've given some information on how to find you online, but if you want to give a specific place that you'd like people to connect with you, feel free to.
Absolutely. Real fast, just thing I'd like to say is, first off, thank you for having me, Stephen, Michael, and Daniel. Thank you very much. I know Michael and Daniel were mostly silent during the time, but thank you very much, gentlemen, for having me on. It means a lot to me. If you want to look at it, if you want to look me up on Sheridan Hall on Facebook. I really do not believe in shunning anybody, so you can definitely email me or Facebook message me anything. Find me on there. That's nowadays that's actually the only way to get a hold of me, so just remember, the last thing I'd like to say to anybody listening who is struggling with mental health, either in creative or in any other way, or if you're even just wanting to understand the predicament, you're not alone. That's the biggest thing. You're not alone. Your feelings are valid. Don't let anybody ever tell you different.
Well, that's a good note to conclude on, for sure. And appreciate you being able to come on the show and talk about a topic like this, because we do not get too many opportunities to talk so candidly about this subject matter. And I know a lot of creatives can relate to it. Definitely an important topic in Imaginarium, where we do have programming that addresses us directly. And it's great that you were able to talk about this in addition to your exciting creative endeavors as a writer and part of the Jay Welland juggernaut now in the world of filmmaking. And it's definitely an exciting time, and we're thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for coming aboard.
Well, thank you very much. You gentlemen have a great one.
We too.
You have a good one.
Appreciate you.
And we'll see you guys next week at 9 p.m. for another exciting Star Chamber show. And definitely go on Kindle, Sheridan C. Hall, type it in, get your copy, and we'll see you next week. Night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Night.